The makeup didn't make me look like a bird. The hair didn't make me look like a bird. In spite of the fact the guy won an Emmy, didn't make me look like a bird. So, you know, I didn't know. Am I a bird? And it wasn't the first scene, but it was the first scene where I had caused a squawk. I squawked and Jim Conway said, John, shut the fuck up. Quit fucking around.
Yeah.
Which is how I knew I wasn't a bird.
Gonna go and do my convention thing. Got my costume, I'm going now. Yeah, we're having a ball. It's Star Trek, y'all. Hey, Danaborn, beam me up.
I'm Connor Trenier. I played Commander Charles Trip Tucker III on Star Trek Enterprise.
And I'm Dominic Keating. And I played Lieutenant Malcolm Reed on Star Trek Enterprise.
And we'd like to welcome you to ShuttlePod.
Cheers. Cheers.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'd like to introduce you once again to our on-camera producer, Erica LaRose.
Hi, guys.
Erica. How's the day?
Oh, it's great. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Good. Awesome. I'm excited to get the show going, so... Yeah. Let's do it.
Yes, ma'am.
Awesome.
One, two, three.
Ding,
let's
ding,
go.
Ding.
Boom.
Boop.
That brings us rather neatly to our inaugural guest, our dear friend and fellow compatriot actor, John Billingsley.
Yes.
Hey.
We are thrilled to have John here. Thank you for coming. And I want to give a brief intro for John's character on the show. Dr. Phlox was the chief medical officer on the Enterprise. His character is a Denobulan with multiple degrees and doctorates in multiple medical fields. He has three wives.
Three wives, each of whom has three husbands.
Exactly.
You do the math.
Yeah. That's.
Am I
that's,
allowed to speak that, before the introduction
absolutely.
Is done?
That's apparently you are.
This is my signature move, to never let the introduction actually
what
get
did I tell you, Erica? I said we throw him a bone and he'll just run with it.
He's the father of
did say that.
Father of five children that he knows of.
Nice pause there.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I like that pregnant pause there.
Well,
yes.
Because
yes,
I was reading off of
yes,
this page.
Uh-huh.
In the Star Trek Enterprise pilot Broken Bow, Dr. Phlox is on Earth as part of the Interspecies Medical Exchange Program started by the Vulcan.
His introduction comes as the surgeon working to save Klang, a Klingon who was on a secret mission and has been shot by a corn farmer in Oklahoma. Oh, America. recruited by Captain Archer, Dr. Phlox speaks to the heart, we think, of the thematic premise of the pilot, but perhaps more importantly, for the whole series of Star Trek Enterprise. We are honoured, are we not, to introduce yet again our dear friend, John Billingsley.
Thank you for having me. I know you tried to get everybody else, and I was sort of the last guy standing, but nonetheless, it didn't stop you from writing a glowing introduction, and I appreciate that.
Bless your heart, mate. What you been up to? Well, we kind of know, but let's hear it from your lips first.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still maintaining an acting career, and I am blissfully married to the wonderful actress Benita Friderisi, and I spend a lot of my time helping to run a not-for-profit called Hollywood Food Coalition.
It does. Sterling work.
Which I've been involved with for about 5 years. I'm the president of the board. We, in addition to serving a hot multi-course meal to all comers 7 nights a week, we share and rescue food with about 100 other not-for-profits all over Los Angeles. And
amazing.
We help to – and the last thing I'm particularly proud of is that we help to figure out systemic problems, identify solutions to those problems that revolve around how to get more food to more people in need.
It's an incredible thing you've done, John. It really – it's quite – humbling, I have to say. We were both honored to be a part of what you call the telecast, the Zoomathon, a couple of weeks
Trek
ago.
Trek Talks.
Tell us
one.
All about that. I That's mean, this right. is the beginning of something big, isn't it?
It was pretty cool. I actually did a podcast with some gentlemen, Trek Geeks, Dan and Bill. And we started chatting. They'd had a guest, Jonathan Frakes, who had done a smaller version of what we ended up doing to raise money for Feeding America, basically just a digital streaming event. And I said, you know, I wonder if we could actually get more guests and kind of do a Jerry Lewis style telethon. And they went for it. And I started bringing some other people to the table, John Champion, Jay Stobie, David Livingston.
God bless David. Yeah.
Who is actually a member of our board.
David, by the way, was one of our
multi-episode
director.
David has directed more episodes than anybody else in Star Trek. Actually, more than the next two guys mushed together.
And really. The director of ShuttlePod 1, which is the sort of impetus for the show.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we decided that we would see what we could do. We started asking people, and it was amazing because nobody said no, they didn't want to. Some people were not free. So we ended up getting 60 Star Trek luminaries, actors, behind-the-scenes folks, directors, producers.
People really showed up.
People really showed up. We ended up, we thought we'd do 4 hours, then 6 hours. It turned out to be 8 hours long.
God, and you were in a lot of it.
I jumped.
I saw the call sheet and I was he's going to be exhausted.
Well, I had to jump in and kind of say, hey, we've just raised, da 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 da. And we had interstitial material introducing the Hollywood Food Coalition in between the various panels. We had 11 panels. We had scientists from Europe who were here to talk about some of the work they were doing. Big success, raised $75,000 for the organization.
And the Roddenberry.
But I was going to say, we better give a shout out for Rod. Yeah,
absolutely.
And the Roddenberry Foundation actually supported us last year. They gave us $75,000.
Just straight off the bat.
Straight off. We met with the foundation.
So you could have done all this with no work.
I don't like to think of it that way. Let's cut that part. I was not expecting Rod to match that day. He basically said he'd match up to $30,000. So that was a big chunk of what we made.
Amazing.
But we had 420 contributions and thousands of people watched from all over the world, and we're definitely going to do it again.
John told me earlier today that I was the first one to sign up.
So. Yes.
Connor has a reputation in the Star Trek community as being the least reliable email responder.
Just in life,
not
really.
This time.
In the franchise. Not this time. Yeah. So I was fully expecting to hear back from Dominic, but instead, I heard back from Connor.
You must have caught him while he was on the loo.
I think I was checking my email at that moment.
I think it's because the love of a good woman has changed, Connor.
That may be true.
Yes. Well, I can't talk about that. That's for you to talk about the good woman in question. I'm thinking of a specific good woman.
Yes, you are.
Yes, I am.
What do you mean? We're not a thing?
No.
Oh, my. I'm sorry.
You and I have to break up.
This show's over.
So anyway, that's a lot of my work. As I said, I'm the president of the board. I have a lot of work on the development front, do a lot of work on the community building front. And I also continue to act. So I'm on a couple of things right now. Pam and Tommy that just came out. And Emily.
I just saw the trailer for that. God bless. Yeah.
And Emily the Criminal. Which
what are
is,
you playing in Pam and Tommy?
I play the absolutely vile.
The dildo salesman.
No, I'm Penthouse's lawyer.
No shit.
And I depose Pam Anderson and am absolutely vile. Basically, the gag is to try and scare her into not going further with a lawsuit against Guccione.
That's when I arrived in LA, pretty much as that was all shit kicking off. Yeah. The Menendez brothers had just ended, and the Pam and Tommy story was just beginning.
It's a pretty wild story. It's a pretty wild story, and I have to say, Lily James does an extraordinary job.
Yeah.
I mean, I would never, if you've seen her work on any number of things.
British,
Yeah, Emily in Paris, is she?
No. The main thing she got to be known for was that British show about the aristocrats.
The other upstairs, downstairs. Yeah. What do they call
like
it?
Like the joke?
Downtown
Abbey.
Downtown Abbey, as the Americans love to call it. She's also in the Churchill reboot with Joe Wrightsville.
Yeah, but she transforms herself, and it's not just an impersonation. I mean, she just did a lovely, it was a real pleasure working.
She's quite
her.
A class act, isn't
she? She was great.
And who plays Tommy?
Sebastian Stan.
Not
an actor I'm familiar with. I hear he was terrific. Right. I've not seen the show yet, but so anyway, I'm doing that and continuing to audition. And
who directed that then?
Pam and Tommy was a miniseries, so different.
David Lean directed. Right. I believe David Lean directed that.
And I'm embarrassed to say that I'm not remembering the
name.
There
are some landscape shots, let me tell you.
I don't remember the name of the young woman who directed my episode, although she was terrific.
I think we have a new segment. Erica, what do you have for us?
We're going to do some trivia now.
Oh, God.
It's going to be multiple choice, every single question. So I'm going to go through four multiple choice, and then you guys have to say your name, and whoever says their name first gets to say their answer.
You have to say my character name or my actual name?
Oh.
I go with...
Uh-huh. You haven't thought through the rules yet, have you?
I was going to snort.
Phil Flux.
Well, yeah, I like that. Whatever makes it more fun. Question number one. Who serves as communications officer in the...
Connor.
Well,
it's not... Yeah. You think you know which show this is. Go on, then.
All right, go ahead. I want
to... Wait, I'm going to finish the question first, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that disqualifies him on Jeopardy.
I feel like lose a point. I feel like Team Star Trek alum should lose a point.
I think so. On Jeopardy, that knocks him right out.
Now that we know the rules...
Uhura?
Oh, she did say that. So she'll restart the question.
All right, I'm sorry. Finish the question.
Are you ready?
Yes.
This is Mark versus...
The world.
Okay. It's Mark versus Connor, Dominic, and Billingsley.
Phil Flux.
Question number one. Who serves as communications officer in the final episode of Star Trek, the original series? We have four multiple choice. Lieutenant Baldwin, Lieutenant Rand, Lieutenant Uhura, Lieutenant Lisa.
Phil Flux.
Flux.
Lieutenant Uhura.
Mark.
Nope. Mark.
Baldwin.
Nope.
Shit.
Connor.
Connor.
C.
Read alert, A. That's covering our asses.
Dominic?
Read alert, A. Whatever A's name was.
Baldwin?
Yeah.
No.
I already answered him.
Next question?
Who was it?
Nobody.
Lieutenant Lisa.
Lieutenant Lisa?
Okay, I've had this conversation before.
All right.
I feel stupid now.
So far, we all suck.
All right, next question. Come on.
What character dies in the series finale of Star Trek Enterprise?
Connor.
You can't do that.
But it's me.
You gotta get the four things in.
Sorry, go ahead.
Hoshi T'Pol Phlox Trip.
Dominic.
I already said my name.
All right.
You guys win.
It's a bust.
It's okay.
All right.
One for Connor.
One for actors.
What type of fish does Captain Picard keep in
Mark.
His... Mark.
Blowfish.
Wait, you gotta let them answer. You gotta put the... What happened to the four in... Yeah.
Choices.
Mark is disqualified. Okay.
Mark is disqualified.
Point for the actors. Next question.
Right. Next question.
So far, we're ahead 2-0.
Who was originally offered the role of Spock?
Now you gotta give...
Connor.
No, you gotta give...
No, Dominic!
We suck at this.
I'll do it again.
Okay.
Who was originally offered the role of Spock? Martin Landau, Roger Moore, Dustin Hoffman... DeForest.
Phil Dominic. Oh, go on then.
A. Martin Landau.
Yes.
I think you're right.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah.
I was going to say Roger Moore.
Yeah.
Actors, Mark Zero.
Martin Landau.
What original Star Trek actor appeared in the pilot episode of Star Trek The Next Generation? Was it William Shatner, Nichelle Nichols, Leonard Nimoy, or DeForest Kelly?
Mark. Phil Dominic. Oh, who was there? I think Mark was, wasn't he?
DeForest Kelly.
Was he really?
Yes, it was. Well, Mark's got it.
3-1.
Okay.
He's like, it's a pretty ship.
Next one.
What type of pet does Captain Archer have on Enterprise?
Mark.
Is it a
cat?
You've got to let
play
the
game. Now you're taking me up.
And you're disqualified, so we get that point. That's 4.
Were you going to say?
Let's point out, by the way, that John
it's
has
a 13-inch beagle.
Has Captain Archer's beagle.
His beagle is got a snout buried in a glass of bourbon.
In a glass of bourbon.
That was it. The Beagle was the gassiest actor on that set next to Jolene, but you didn't know. You want to cut that?
I've got a story about that.
Yeah.
What was the first ship James T. Kirk served on? USS Enterprise, USS Yorktown, USS Farragut, USS Dakota.
Phil Phlox.
Go ahead.
B.
B as in Yorktown?
Yes.
Nope.
Is it not the? I think it's the USS Farragut, isn't it?
Now you have to throw your name out.
No. Mark.
Dominic.
Connor.
Yep. Farragut.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was.
All right.
All right.
Well, that's really sad. That means producer Mark lost 4-2.
In what was possibly the worst game ever played.
It was
quite
possibly. Games.
The worst trivia game.
We'll get buzzers.
That's right.
So here we are today to talk with our dear friend John and to weigh into the series of Star Trek Enterprise, starting with our pilot episode, Broken Bow.
It was nominated for 3 Emmys and won the 2002 Emmy Award for Outstanding Special Visual Effects for a series.
Was I nominated for an Emmy?
You were not?
Not that year.
Not that year.
Was any of us ever nominated for an Emmy?
Not an Emmy, but I got 2 Saturn nominations.
You did?
Holy we won cow. An Emmy for Hair.
We did,
yeah.
We did win.
I think everybody reacts the same way with
hair.
That.
Yeah.
Producer question.
It was mostly your hair.
Yes.
Really.
When you win an Emmy for Hair, is it the hairdresser who wins the Emmy or do the actors get it?
The actors who have the most attractive hair get the Emmy. It's why
they all parade themselves up.
I have a hair Emmy at home and
right.
prosthetic penis Emmy. I've accumulated a number of Emmys in my career.
John, what was the experience of getting the job?
I am convinced that everybody in the Star Trek universe has heard this story, so I'm going to tell my rather quick version of this. When I received the sides, you don't get the whole script, the only instruction I had was come in with a slight alien accent, and I had no idea what that meant, so I practiced a bunch of bogus and silly voices with the missus, and she shot them all down, and the only thing that was left standing at the end was that perhaps he was a bird on his alien planet, and in moments of rapture or joyous transport, he squawked.
Was he any other animals on the way to the bird?
No, he was just a bird. He was just a bird. I mean, he was boyish. In fairness, I make jokes about this all the time, but I thought he had an ebullience and a spirit about him that needed to kind of come out in the performance. So I thought perhaps, like a bird, it'd be like, "Rawr!" Like he's, he's uncontainable.
And we are trying to do something that gets us noticed.
Uncontainable glee. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I went in and I auditioned and, periodically I went, rawr, rawr, and lo and behold, I get the fucking job. And up until the day we shoot, I'm still not entirely sure whether I'm a bird.
We did the whole read through. Do you remember?
Yeah.
He squawked at the table.
I squawked at the table. Yeah. I asked Rick and Brandon. I said, so what do you think about the squawk? Am I a bird? I kind of thought maybe I'm a bird, la, la, la. And Rick and Brandon, who are absolutely inscrutable when they want to be, just kind of shrugged. We'll see. It's like, we'll see. Kind of like to know.
Ish.
The makeup didn't make me look like a bird. The hair didn't make me look like a bird. In spite of the fact the guy won an Emmy, didn't make me look like a bird. So, you know, I didn't know. Am I a bird? And then on the – it wasn't the first scene, but it was the first scene I had caused to squawk. The first scene where I had caused to squawk, I squawked, and Jim Conway said, John, shut the fuck up. Quit fucking around.
Yeah.
Which is how I knew I wasn't a bird.
And I'll be honest. Wow. When watching the pilot recently, I had a feeling
you could see a suppressed squawk.
I could.
Yeah, I know.
I really felt like there was a moment where you were like,
exactly. I heard him. We met at the network audition at Paramount. I was the first to arrive. And I mean, John knows this story too, but I suddenly realized, having signed that contract with all the zeros, like, and you're ready for the other half dozen actors that look and feel just like you. And he's a bit famous, and that one's better looking.
And also, just so you know, audience, you cannot go read until your agent has signed that contract.
It's all, yeah, exactly. You know, that's
it's incredibly
official.
Stressful.
It's official. And you know that if you get
it's even scarier than that, because you have to sign the contract on the day.
Yeah.
The actual papers are shoved in front of you before you walk in the room.
I've arrived at the Paramount, at the plush offices, and I'm the only chap there. I'm the first to arrive, and I think, well, they're coming now. I sit down on the sofa. I've signed the contract. I've sat there. I've got the size. And I'm waiting, and some minutes go by, and no one's coming. And then just as I'm starting to think, oh, bugger me, I'm the only one they're bringing, I can hear this up the stairs. And I'm like, oh, here they come. And he arrives.
And you know I'm not competing for your
role. Well, I know. My first thought was, oh, bloody hell, they don't know who they want for this part if they think he's going to be Malcolm Reed as well. Anyway, he signed his contract, sat down next to me, and I was trying to look over his shoulder to see what size he had. And he sort of half caught me, and I said, are you reading for Malcolm Reed? And he goes like, who? Anyway, he went in first, and I heard him squawking. I was like, oh, my word, this boy has got some balls. Because if you know, your eyebrows don't meet in the middle right.
And you're thinking, you're Malcolm Reed doesn't squawk?
Yeah, squawk. Well, no, by now I know he's up for another role. But, yeah, I could hear him go, I had my ear to the door like you do. And, I was like, what? And then out he shuffles afterwards, and then I go, yeah. That was quite something.
And I have
man.
Squawked in every audition ever since, I have to say, for the last 25 years.
It served you well.
Oh, NYPD Blue.
I was going to ask if you're suppressing your squawk, but you're not.
I'm suppressing my squawk as we speak. I know, you know. It's my wife is always saying, quit suppressing your squawk, honey. Come on.
There was one week when I had cause to, and I've never done it since. I auditioned for, I think, True Blood, which you were on. It was some weird flashback scene to Louis the 15th.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Reign.
Yeah, yeah.
I nearly got Louis the 15th with some courtesan. And in the same week, I went up for Guillermo del Toro for that show he did about that plane that touched down.
Yeah, I was up for that too.
And
yeah.
It was the
Billy Idol.
Billy Idol-esque part. And I had cause to, literally within 3 days of each other, reach down my pants into my head. And
you fondled your genitalia?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Never done it since.
Yeah.
Never had to do it again.
Well, that's the thing about acting, in all seriousness. I mean, if you're going to go for it, you really have to. You have got to be able to transcend the nerves that say, don't, be careful.
Yeah.
You cannot.
No, you can't.
You can't be careful. You have to love your choices.
Agreed.
And be adventurous.
And own them.
And not give a fuck whether you get the job.
No,
agreed. Because it's so out of your control. I mean, anybody in our business knows that there are a bajillion reasons why you're not going to get the job. You're too skinny. You're too fat. You're not a name. You're too this or too that. All you can do is go in and have
the producer's not sleeping with you.
A blast.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right.
So you get the job, and how did you feel? I mean, did you have a Star Trek sense of what you were getting into in terms of the scope of what it all was? Or
sure. I mean, you can't help, if you have your finger on the pulse of popular culture, to not understand that Star Trek is an extraordinary phenomenon. I was not necessarily a Star Trek fan. I'd watched some episodes of the original series as a kid. I was 6 when it came on originally, and I'd watched it in reruns in New York. But I had not seen much of Next Gen. I'd never watched Deep Space. I'd never watched Voyager. So I was not versed in the universe, but I definitely was cognizant that it was a social phenomenon and that it was going to be a life-changing gig.
Yeah.
And I had some friends who were Star Trek fans, and they kind of gave me a quick tutorial on some of the shit that I needed to know. And I watched some of the episodes. So I was not – the only thing that, you know, if you're playing somebody who's wearing a rubber head, you don't know what the experience is going to be like until you've got the rubber head on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the first day – and this never happened again in 4 years. But the very first day, I was called in at 5 when you're called in to get your makeup on. 2.5 hours putting the rubber head on, and I'm supposed to be first up. They flip-flopped the schedule. It turns out I wasn't up until the very end of the day. Ugh. So I spent 14 or whatever, 16 hours. You know, it was the first day, so there were tons of glitches in a rubber head. And, you know, you can't see. The eyeballs are a pain in the ass. You're not used to them. By the end of the day, I thought, I don't want to do this. Get me out of the contract. Couldn't remember my lines. That was the worst day. Oddly enough, in all my 4 years, I think with one other exception, when they kind of threw me a wrinkle and threw me some scenes that I hadn't prepared for, that was the worst day I had.
By the end of the first season, he's coming up with that song.
Oh, yeah. So I should sing this song because I was the only person who was actually – I was the character actor on the show with a bunch of hard-bodied young folk who were always running around in their blue underpants.
So I count myself in those numbers.
So I was like the guy who'd come in and say, well, the endocrine system of blah, 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 blah. See you later. And I would walk off and I'd have 6 days off. There was a number of episodes for me, so I created a song that I used to sing specifically to Dominic, specifically when he was in the spacesuit because I knew that would irritate him. Day off. Day off, 6 days off, and the check still comes. Character actor, it had multiple verses. Yeah. Character, Dominic wouldn't let me get through the second verse. Go character on. Actor in the sun, 6 days off, and the check still comes.
Well, Dominic. Because Dominic's experience in the spacesuit was relatively
legendary.
Unique.
Is the word we're looking for.
It was miserable for all of us.
It truly was.
Scott Bakula, by the way.
And but he's back out.
He said, I got to say. Well, also, but Scott Bakula was, I mean, what a mensch. We have never met a bigger trooper than Scott Bakula. If the scene called for Scott Bakula to have nails driven through his hands, he would say, no, do you want it driven from the front to the back of the bottom?
Yeah, really.
Well, he would occasionally say, let's use Connor.
But so those spacesuits were incredibly onerous. He had to wear them more than anybody, I think.
I did.
I think Scott had to do more than
I don't know about that.
Well, maybe he just bore it better.
It all changed when we did Minefield, which was the second episode of the second season, when I get pinned to that, the hull of...
You're scotch taped, as I recall.
I'm trying to think what species...
Romulans.
Romulan, thank you.
The Romulan.
So Scott had quite a bit to do in... I mean, I had to pretend I was weightless in that spacesuit, pinned to a thing, you know, with that. Those helmets were 17
pounds. That's part of the
training,
Dominic. That's part of the training.
Anyway, Scott put his back out, and all of a sudden, do you remember Mark, his trainer, came in, and those whole suits were ergonomically changed, and we suddenly had belts that held the thing up.
Oh.
I mean, poor Jo, God bless her. I mean, she could do 20 minutes in that thing, and she was done.
It was pretty miserable. God forbid you had to go to the bathroom, because everyone was like, hour off, take an hour. And the poor sods who were running costumes, I mean, I felt so badly for them.
Jamie and Matt.
God bless. Well done.
Bless them. Yes, it took them forever to get us out and in, and they were a misery.
I had a couple of meltdown moments, as he was going to allude to.
Such as?
Some of which are
some of which are on tape.
Some of which are on tape for your viewing delectation.
You've never heard swearing till you've heard an English bloke.
No, it's true. It took Dominic 20 years to learn not to say certain words. That's you're right. Not to say
one starts with a C.
Cocksucker!
That oddly enough was the first word that my father taught me because he was a gay sailor. And that is, you know.
That's no joke.
No, it's no joke. My father is gay and he was a sailor. And I learned every curse word in the book. And that is, of course, as a dear gay friend of mine said, it's like you make cocksucking sound like a bad thing, which is why we don't like it. It's a nice thing and you should try it sometime.
Yeah.
And that has changed my relationship to that word.
Have you tried it?
It is not a pejorative.
I've heard tell of it.
It's an uncomfortable pause happening.
This was not covered in the pre-show.
I think it's a great word.
John, I want to cut to what it was like
American
to have your face
chaps
glued to the floor.
Oh, yes. Yes, this is a measure of how much affection I had amongst the cast and crew. There was an episode with the, and I couldn't remember the name of their species the other day either, the Ferengi.
Ah.
The Ferengi board our ship. They're space pirates of a sort, and they introduce some kind of sleep gas into the air ducts. So the only scene I have, which is probably an episode in which I sang 6 days off and the checks still come.
And I'm in my underwear the entire time.
You're in your underwear the entire time. Right. It was kind of the essence, the quintessence of Star Trek.
Right.
I am knocked out on the floor of sick bay, and they're coming in and they're just going to do a really quick pop. They're kind of like showing everybody who's knocked out in the various stations. So in and out. So I get into the makeup and the wardrobe and the yada yada. They come in, I lie down on the floor, you know, set up. They come in, they take a quick pop, and everybody's running to the next soundstage. And I was kind of like just dozing because they'd had me there to line for a while and didn't have to speak. So at some point it's like, okay, time to get up. And my face was stuck to the floor and I couldn't get up. And I started saying, hey, everybody. And it's like everybody was gone. There wasn't anybody in the soundstage.
They just walk off, don't they? Yeah. Suddenly it's a dull, it's a dark set. Yeah, and they've moved on.
Right. They've moved on.
They literally left you. I've never heard this.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, the sound, it's like, they're going to find me here. I'm going to be dead. I don't know when they're coming back. Right. They have a soundstage.
Water,
you know?
Water.
Yeah.
Was it really kind of glued?
I would have been able to eventually rip it off, I thought.
With some consequence. Budget. Were you shooting the rest of the day at all? No, that was it.
That was my entire episode.
That wasn't a night in sickbay then. Which episode was that?
It was the one with the... I didn't watch the ones I wasn't in. It was the ones with the Ferengis.
Right.
Speaking of costumes, there's one particular moment around Halloween one year.
I won first prize.
Actually, it's online. It's on the internet.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Which that was
Wait,
the Rocky
is it
Horror
filmed?
No, I think there's a still
the Rocky
photo.
Horror still, one.
No, Rocky Horror.
That was Scott's lame attempt to top me in the second year.
Oh.
And it was very successful.
What was the first year? What was it?
The focus puller, whose name is escaping me, showed up.
The surfer.
No, the woman.
She was a woman. She didn't last. She was great, nice lady. She had, and to give you a little bit of the backstory, for years there was a Halloween contest when Halloween fell on a day we were shooting.
Yeah.
And everybody, usually the crew, would come dressed up. So I hate Halloween. I hate dressing up. I don't know why I'm a fucking actor. But I of all the things to be.
It's awesome, like, darling.
I don't even like wearing pants.
We haven't even got there.
Bullocks wearing pants.
So I show up and the gal who's the focus puller said, my alter ego chickened out. We were going to do a dominatrix and a submissive thing. And she's all dressed up as a dominatrix. And I said, I'll be the submissive. Hold on a second. So I went to Matt in wardrobe and I said, get me the whole nine yards. I want the red ball. I want the black leather girdle. I want the whip and the chain. I want everything.
And he had to pop down the Hollywood Boulevard.
It was in costume.
It was already, yeah.
It's a nice thing about being on the Paramount lot. It's like, you know, you can get that shit.
Was it the mirrored universe stuff?
So they went and got everything. And the whole, so I was the submissive. And
that's right.
We had a Frankenstein. I think we had some pretty benign sort of thing. Out comes you.
Yes. Anyway, I won first prize, or we won first prize. They led me into the captain's chair and she whipped me and flagellated me. And Paramount later banned, I believe.
Shockingly.
Shockingly, yes. They said, you know, no actors in their makeup can appear. Yeah, because, I mean, there's Phlox in Bondage out on the internet.
Yeah, I guess so.
I didn't know that it was out on the internet, though. I have a picture of it.
I have no recollection of you being in the Phlox headgear.
You might
head
not have been there that
day. I know I was there. I know that was stamped.
Do we have to look up Phlox in Bondage?
Phlox in Bondage, yeah.
Phlox in Bondage.
I this is not something I expected to talk about today, but, you know, fan fiction / fiction, I occur quite frequently.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. You've been in.
Apparently, Connor and I are hot couple.
I believe that shuttle pod one, baby.
You'd be surprised.
I believe I've been involved in Star Trek porn.
You've been referenced in Star Trek porn.
Well, it's my face on porn actors. And doing their job effectively in their own profession.
Nice.
Yeah.
Modern technology.
All right, listen. Speaking of fans,
I think
that we have some fan questions that I hope to God aren't nearly like the ones we've just been talking about.
Oh, I rather hope they do.
I thought you were taking your life in your hands when you had me as the first guest.
Jesus Christ.
And I thought this show was going to be dull.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You have fan questions? What is it?
We do. We have fan questions already. We've got a slew of them.
Don't ask any with the word nacelle in it. I don't answer those questions.
Okay.
I don't know what it is.
Great.
Well,
I won't do that.
All right. You know, it comes up.
Is that a person?
No, it's a part of a ship.
Oh. All right, guys. So,
come on, then, Ms.
Rose. I read that Connor and Jolie were not thrilled with the Trip to Paul romance. And if I remember, I didn't like it during the first run of the series. But I rewatched the series last year, and I thought it was a good storyline. How does Connor feel about that?
Well, the relationship was interesting because I think in the first couple of years, it seemed as though to Paul and Archer were going to be together. And then they decided that Trip was going to lose his spine and follow her anywhere to watch her get married. And he even left Enterprise for an episode because he just couldn't stand the tension between he and T'Pol. And then I thought that season four was really interesting and culminating with them having the first interspecies baby, and it didn't make it. And I thought that that was kind of fascinating. The interesting thing was that when we had the scene where Trip has to come tell T'Pol that the baby didn't make it. Well, I had known that my wife was pregnant,
that's right,
but I couldn't say anything because it was only a month in, and you're not supposed to say anything until about 3 months. And when I went in to do that scene, the crying was real. And when the scene was over, I couldn't get it all back together and had to go to the corner of the soundstage. And this was really one of the nice moments that I had with Jolene in the series, just as her and I, she walked up and she was the first person that I told outside of my family that we were having Jasper. Mm-hmm. And she gave me a hug and she sort of helped me sort of bring it all back in to go back to work. And it was a really nice, touching moment. I do think that the relationship in the fourth season was fully formed in a way that it hadn't been previously. So that's my take on it.
Yeah.
Did anybody have any questions about some Phlox Hoshi romance?
Yeah.
Somebody want to talk about that?
So you squat for a second? Of the 160 fan questions we got, almost 100 were about
the Phlox Hoshi.
Did you pitch that idea?
I did. I pitched that I screwed around with every fucking actor in that show. And not one of them was. They didn't take up any money.
Well, you had three wives.
A lot of room. And the one that appeared in the show made a pass at you.
That's right. That's true.
Question number two from the fans. What is your friendship and dynamic like in real life between the three of you and now compared to then, and first impressions of each other? How have they changed over time?
Well, God bless. I mean, 20 years on and we were all still in each other's lives. Isn't that a lovely thing?
Yeah.
You know, we all know as actors, you know, you have best intentions about
conventions.
The conventions have certainly been a big part of that. And that,
well, the great luxury of conventions is that, you know, we all have our lives and they're busy, hopefully. And we get these opportunities and the luxury to spend a couple of days together. I remember several years ago, we were all in Boston together and mm-hmm. spent the day walking around. And you know, you get to have.
It might be 10 years ago now.
Chicago and Vegas. No, it's great. It's a wonderful
thing. Yeah, I was going to say, in locales around the world, never mind America.
But that is one of the wonderful odd perks that if you are on a like a crime drama, you ain't going to crime drama conventions. No. And it's really, really hard to stay in touch with people in this business. You have, as you say, busy
best
lives.
Intentions to do so. And you make best friends with someone on other shows, other things you've shot, films and stuff, but it just doesn't.
And without any, I mean, I love these guys, and actually I loved everybody on our show. Unfortunately, we don't get to see Jolene very much. She has three kids and she's kind of out of our lives. But I think the rest of us, you know, when we see each other, it's always a delight. I in my experience professionally, have felt like, you know, nothing but affection for almost any cast and crew I've worked on. But you don't get the opportunity to rekindle those relationships.
No, you don't.
Right.
And I wished I've worked on some sets where I've gotten in the car, you know, at the end of the day's filming, I'm like, oh, get me
out. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. There's been some toxic places.
There's always also been a lot of intention about like, oh, let's stay, you know, in touch.
And, yeah, you hear it all the time.
All the time, you know.
And
you mean it.
Yeah.
You know, because you have this, it's an interesting community when you're doing a project that, you know, you're sort of, you know, giving your best and you're connecting, especially as actors, as most effectively as you can with one another and looking each other in the eye and trying to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sort of elicits that feeling when you're done of like, God, I think you're fantastic. Let's let's keep this connection. And but somehow there's a real gift that we've been given.
14 hours a day together, day in, day out, yes. day in, day out, day in, day out. I mean, you go through every high and every low.
Yeah.
You know, the losses and the setbacks and the triumphs and the, you know, births and the deaths.
Right.
And you cannot help but get close with with each other if you're decent human beings.
Yeah. No, quite. Are you guys ready for question number three?
Sure. Oh,
sorry.
From fans. That was really deep.
Lovely set.
On that note, how did you feel walking onto the bridge the first time?
I was the first shot of the whole show.
No, I didn't know that.
It was just a pop. Me at my console. But yeah, I took that first step up onto the bridge and was like, well, here goes, baby.
I thought I never had to go.
I just wanted to just remind me, when we both got cast together on that same day, I remember you calling Bonnie, his wife, and I could hear her on the, we had just had cell phones, and I could hear Bonnie go, how'd it go? And he just goes, da, 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 da. She's like,
I thought because I was the engineer, I was never going to have a spot on the bridge. And the reality was, is I didn't, because I was posited next to you. I had no chair.
I'm surprised. I've watched half a dozen episodes to get ready to start doing this thing. I'm surprised that I let you stand next to me quite as many times.
Well, also, as you, from the actor's point of view, the bridge sucks.
Yeah.
Because you're all spread out. So there's no way to get in two shots and three shots. So it's, you know. It's
he did. I let him. You owe me big time.
God almighty. And you've always got to react to the imaginary alien. Yeah. And there's the shaking.
And that brings us back to.
So happy.
That brings us back to what a mensch Scott Bakula was.
Amazing.
Because those workload days for him were intense.
Yep.
And we were screwing around. I mean, literally, me in particular. I mean, just having a right old laugh.
He kept it together.
And he had two small children. And he was dad all night.
He had four children.
But two small ones that literally were still
kids.
They
all were small to me. I don't know. They were short.
I mean, Chelsea was already quite grown. But he was a dad at home all through the night.
Oh, sometimes he wouldn't sleep. I mean, he had a challenging kid in terms of sleeping, like I eventually did.
He was, talk about, I mean, like you say, now, I remember one time.
Amazingly good spirited. He knew everybody's birthday. He knew everybody's name. Yeah. He went out of his way to say
shook
hi to
everybody's
every extra.
Hand at the end of the day.
Yeah, he was a classy guy.
Any extra that was new on the set,
and
he knew right away.
When you alluded before to there are days when you come home from a set and you feel like, God damn it, screw them. It's usually because number one is an
ass. Yes, is an ass. Right.
Number
one starts at the top.
On the call sheet. It sets the tone.
Totally.
If number one is neurotic or doesn't show up on time,
just a bit of a pill.
It just infects the whole set.
Yeah,
I learned more about working on a set from him than I have and had from anybody else.
Oh, really? Yeah, interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, did you ever pitch?
Yeah.
Yes and no. I pitched informally. You know, Bob Picardo used to kind of go in and pitch, you know, and anything that Bob Picardo said, they turned it into, I sing opera. All right, you sing opera. It's like, I'm having an affair with the Borg. You're having an affair with the Borg. Me? I couldn't pitch a goddamn thing. I pitched an idea that I lost weight, you know, in the third season, which
I remember that.
I subsequently found it. but I suggested that perhaps, you know, they pulled a tapeworm out of my ass. They threw it out the airlock and it wrapped around the ship. And, you know, we were caught in Dr. Phlox's tapeworm. They said no to that.
That was the Halloween show?
I get they would say no to that. But they also said no to one idea.
Did you really pitch that idea?
Well, informally, you know, if I happened to bump into somebody.
You mean at the wrap party?
You know, at the craft.
A couple of drinks.
And crafty.
A crafty.
These bagels, these locks are good.
Say, Brandon, while you're here. Yeah. While you're here.
Have I got one for you?
I suggested that, hey, what if you pick up a Denobulan ship in distress?
Uh-huh.
And all the Denobulans, it turns like they're all like Oscar Madison. They're slobs. They leave their underpants lying around. They eat all the food. They, you know, everybody ends up hating the Denobulans. These goddamn fucking Denobulans. We got to get them out of here. But they all look like me. And they said no to that.
Well, that's quite a lot of work with the Denobulan makeup task.
It would have been me. It would have been all CGI. I would have been like
grins everywhere.
It would have been my Emmy episode.
Right.
That
grin cost $10,000, didn't it? At least.
Yes, that's why they used it only once. Because our ratings went down rather abruptly. They weren't going to spend $10,000 on my puss.
No, CGI was... it wasn't on account of the grin, was it?
It was in part. Well, you know, the budgets went down. I mean, you know.
They didn't like the. I mean, did.
No. They liked the grin fine, but they weren't going to spend $10,000 on that particular effect.
No.
I mean, also why we did more bottle shows for those who are listening.
Which is how we got to Shuttlepod 1.
That's right.
Which was meant to be that. And then it turned out to not really be that.
Yeah, I think we were on location less than possibly any other Star Trek show would be.
Is that right?
That would be my bet.
I'm curious. Do you remember your first moment or what your first line was on set?
It was probably under my breath, oh, fuck, get me out of the show. Because as I alluded to before, I had been on set all day long in the rubber head. I'd never worn a rubber head before. It was like, is this going to be what every day is like? And right. I went up on my first line.
So your first line was line?
My first line was line. Exactly.
Can I only imagine Jim Conway snarl.
Oh, my God. I know. It was
just, God damn it, Billingsley.
Yeah. It was he didn't awful. Take any prisoners that
and
night.
Generally, I was pretty good on lines. I mean,
You were amazing.
I had a lot of time. There was only one other time when they actually wrote a scene the night before, and I didn't think I had it. And I'd gone out carousing. I thought, you know,
coming a little pasty,
on a Fandango?
I got home that night. It was like, oh, new pages.
Was
for
that
tomorrow.
This is in the day when they used to arrive in an envelope.
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah.
Kids, you've no idea what we went through.
On the doorstep, pink pages, green pages, double puce pages, and like two new scenes.
It was always a rude awakening, wasn't it? It was bugger me. I've got to relearn it.
With a snootful the next day, and I was able to get, there was two scenes. I was able to get one of them down, but the other one was just like, you know, a particular amount of gobbledygook. And it's with Scott. Roxanne Dawson was directing. It was one of the last scenes of the day in sick bay. And there, I was so not getting it. There was one word like, you know, the Mendocians or whatever. Mm. And I kept fucking it up. And about the 15th take, I fucked it up. And the entire crew went, Mendocians! It's like, moving on.
They'd all been together for 16 Jesus. Years. And there is a limit.
Yeah.
We would like, one of the things that we're doing for all of our guests is reminding them of what the first thing they ever said linearly in Star Trek. First thing that Phlox ever said on screen was his autotomic system was disrupted by the blast, but his redundant neural functions are ...
So, oh yeah. So imagine 14 hours in a rubber head. I was up since 4:30 in the morning. I think my life is going to be a misery, and that's my first line.
Yeah.
My line.
Nervous system, for goddamn.
And that poor woman, Jan.
Jan, I just saw her today.
Did you really?
I bumped her into the post.
No, kidding. Today.
How was she?
Oh, that's great.
I could go on and on. Jan and I are good friends.
Oh, I love Jan. Yes.
Do you stay in touch?
That poor woman, because, you know, we all know this, but
script supervisor.
Word perfect. And if we weren't word perfect, they had to make a call. Jan would have to call the office and say, well, he said, if, except for and, but, and whatever.
Oh, I couldn't
believe
it.
And I remember being on set and saying, come on.
Yeah, I did. I had one big speech quite early on in that pilot, and I nailed it. And I thought, and then they go, let's go again. And then she comes sauntering over and says, Dominic, you said. And I literally went, yeah, fucking shit. Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
she goes, not on this show.
It's not unusual in Hollywood. I mean, but I will say that it's one thing when it happens on a David Kelly show
or
it happens on West Wing. There is a part of you that says, you know, don't take this the wrong way.
Yeah.
But Star Trek?
Yeah.
You're gonna bust my chops over
they were. They were precious. Right. They were pretty precious.
And we also weren't allowed to have sides on
set. They had no sides.
Really?
We were not allowed to have sides on set. You could have your script on set.
Yes.
And your chair.
Right. We didn't have minis, did we?
You couldn't carry your sides like in your sock.
No, and for guest stars who arrived on the show to like say, and wear my sides, and to be told, oh, we don't have sides. I think sometimes there is a famous story about a man who played a Vulcan.
Yes.
So bollocks that he ripped his Vulcan ears off and ran.
That was my scene. I was with him.
Really?
After lunch.
Is he going to be a guest by any chance?
We're hoping to find him.
I hope so.
He might have quit the business.
Yeah, he might have quit the business.
I think he threw himself in that dumpster along with the ear.
I mean, it's terrifying. It was awful, you know.
They found the ear, one of the ears, in that dumpster in Godfather Alley.
And then they threatened to sue him for the other one.
Are you? No.
I'm not kidding. They threatened to sue him for the other one.
The other one.
We rehearsed it, and believe me, this has happened to all of us and to everyone.
Everyone.
We're doing we rehearse the scene, then we do it for camera, and then we go off and they set up the lights. And, you know, he was having a hard time, and I was like, hey, man.
All morning.
And it was late at night.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, man, no, we're good. We're here. We got it. And he was like, okay. And then they called us back, and I'm sitting there.
He didn't show.
He just never came back. He took off, you know. And when I found out the next day that it happened, I felt so badly for him. And to be honest with you, I was really kind of annoyed and upset with production for the way that they
handled. It was a different time.
His issue.
I mean, we talk about mental issues now, like we talk about going to the loo. It's an open thing. And
well, it's also I mean, if you're an actor, you know, there is no more terrifying feeling than the sense that, you know, tick 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 tick. Everybody's here.
Yes.
Everybody's looking. Yeah. All the lights are on. I did the Conners a couple of years ago, and they had rewritten the script the night before. And I had that problem too.
And that's a sitcom.
It's sitcom.
That's live audience sitcom. Or?
Well, this was pre-taped, so that was a little.
But nevertheless, that's bang bang bang.
Yeah, it's bang bang bang.
Marks, beats.
Yeah, and it is a sick. It is. I can't describe it to those.
It's
folks
the worst.
You can implode.
You can go the opposite direction.
It's like God, please stay loose here. Stay loose.
Yeah.
I got this.
If you are a guest, especially, I mean, it's one thing if you're a series regular. Yeah. But if you're a guest.
No, you're all on your own. My God, you're in your birthday suit and you're just staringly on your own. Yeah. So, kids, if you really want to be an actor.
Don't screw up your lines. So, we're out of time. Thank you, John, so much for being a part of this.
I feel like I should say something noble and worthy. And it's all been smartassery. Is there anything we should say that's sort of like, or is that the.
I think we've done a lot of nobility in our
nobility?
Star Trek time.
Right. We would love to have you come back, John, to say something noble. Okay.
Yes. And in honoring nobility, we want to give you a bottle of the Angel's Envy.
Look at that.
Look at that.
Beautiful.
Fabulous.
The other thing is knowing that you're a voracious reader of all things, we were trying to figure out a good book for you.
Ooh.
And knowing that you and I had talked about that if you were ever on a deserted island, if you had to have one author, you would said Dickens years ago. Maybe it's changed.
That would be a worthy choice.
Well, we couldn't find any Dickens.
Oh, okay. He's pretty obscure.
We found the island.
Well, not
yeah.
We're sending you to the island.
All we had was letters from America.
Okay.
But in light of the character that you played and the knowledge that you are interested in all things of letters, I found a book called Tales from the Underground. It's a natural history of the subterranean life.
And we thought it was rather in keeping with Phlox.
In light of what Phlox might be interested
in.
Slugs. That,
you know. Beetles.
He's
probably read it three times.
I know I haven't, but every year the New York Times publishes their 100 best books of the year.
All right.
And I always cut those out, and I have a huge stack of them going back for years and years and years.
You get through pretty much
I'm a collector as well.
Right.
So I try and collect the 100 every year. And I skim it every now and again. And I just saw this the other day, and I thought, oh, this sounds really intriguing. I got to look for this. So you.
God bless.
Excellent.
Well,
very happy.
And here's a little love letter from us to you.
Oh, yes. Bless your heart.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys.
Johnny.
Absolutely, yeah.
Lovely to see you.
Lovely
in
to be
the flesh.
Seen. Lovely to be seen. Anytime. As you can tell, our relationship to the to answer that earlier question is loving, chaotic, exuberant.
But isn't it great? 20 years on, we're still in the same room.
Yeah, I love you guys.
I mean, really, and, what a blessing
likewise,
to
John.
Have been, you know, on the boards with the both of you.
And this is what always sucks about me. I never actually let the ending happen. I just keep talking.
And then we go down in volume.
And then it just goes down. Yeah.
In all things I've heard.
Yeah. One of the things that I loved about you guys.
She's already lighting the cigarette. You must be done now, dear.
One of the things I always loved about you guys is that you both were readers. Because I remember early on, we always could talk about books.
Yes.
And I always wanted to know what you guys were reading.
I'm still finishing Donna Tartt. I've got another 100-something pages. The Little Friend.
I love that book.
Coming to its conclusion.
You turned me on to that.
For some reason, even though that book has I don't want to say what the ending is, but I think some people felt like the ending was disappointing. But there are moments in that book that are just like
I was thinking of you as I was
between the walls.
Spoke about it.
Yes, yeah. The snakes when he's hot. Oh, yeah.
Oh, completely. Yeah. I mean, the stuff at the funeral and Harriet is just the most extraordinary character. Yeah. She's, she's an incredible writer, Miss Tutte.
Have you read the
I've read the other two, Secret.
The Goldfinch.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's one of my all-time favorites.
You know,
I think
the first one is actually written about Bennington College.
That's my favorite of her books.
It's totally about Secret History.
The guy who's killed, Bunny.
Yeah.
I know Bunny. He lived next
door to me. No kidding. He's a real person.
He lives in L.A. I would name him on the air, but I would get sued.
Was there a Pluto Club? Was that what it was called?
There was a loose agglomeration of Latin snobs that affiliated with Claude Fredericks, who was the Latin teacher.
And she's about our age, isn't she?
She was this freshman the year after I graduated. Right. So she knew the person I'm alluding to.
Did you have first-hand knowledge of that?
Anybody, when I read that book, was like, oh, I know who they're talking about.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. Were the twins actually at school?
I don't think. But
they were from Vampire Lestat.
And I have not read that book for many, many years.
That's a great book.
Goldfinch, I thought was
superb.
The stuff in Vegas, I thought,
incredible. I mean, all those various chapters of that book. Fantastic.
I'm reading Gravity's Rainbow right now.
This is the one that you said. I don't know that. It's hard work, as you said.
It's like Ulysses. It's like Pynchon, and it's 900 pages long, and he's extraordinarily dense. Parts of it are fabulous. Parts of it are very madcap. Mm. But he is not going to let you off the hook as a reader. Mm. So I've been reading it. Gravity's Rainbow.
Yeah.
All right. Not maybe his most accessible, and maybe not even his best, but for a lot of
Pynchon.
Thomas Pynchon.
I occasionally I read Borges's The Labyrinth a while back.
Yeah, I know.
I'll take you down.
Yeah, I know. But it's good. It's like, it's good to pick up a book that's going to
It's really demanding.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anyway, we're probably boring. Right.
Again, I just want to thank you so much, John, for coming on to help us kick this off.
My pleasure.
It's a gift to see you, and it's a gift to talk to you, and
it's to us.
That's right.
Hey,
we got a dribble.
Cheers.
Here it is.
Cheers.
Well. Unbelievably, we have come to the conclusion of our inaugural show. What a fabulous guest to have on that first episode.
Wonderful,
dear John Billingsley.
Yeah,
terrific actor. Wonderful human being.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that work he does with the Hollywood Food Coalition is truly phenomenal.
Truly is.
And him and Bonnie, his wife.
And I think we want to remind people that we're going to be donating to the Hollywood Food Coalition as part of this process and this show.
We sure are. And we're honored to do so. Please keep your questions coming in for future episodes about the show. Any questions you have for Connor and myself, we'll be alerting you as to who our guests are going to be in the shows going forward. In the meantime, I'd like to say cheerio to our wonderful and fantastic on-air producer, Erica LaRose. American cheese.
Thank you.
Off camera, not quite so phenomenal, but equally wonderful. He's radio friendly, I'll say that.
I have a Cartier.
Bless you, man.
To our wonderful, hardworking crew who've really helped put this together. And dear Chris, who has been long suffering. And to you, mate. Look at them, destroying props as usual.
I broke all of them every time. But it's very important that I want to say it as we go away.
Nanu, guys.
Lots of love. Y'all take care.
That's hilarious.
You want to go? You want to go again?
Nothing's changed.